Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Kyle Harper, professor of classics and letters, and senior vice president and provost at the University of Oklahoma. And we're talking about his new book, The Fate of Rome, Climate, Disease, and the End of an Empire. Kyle, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to be talking to you.
Thanks for having me here, Mark.
Now, the research that your premise is based on is that the fall of the Roman Empire was the triumph of nature over human ambitions. That's a quote from page 4. Is this a relatively new concept about the fall of the Roman Empire? Because there have been a lot of ideas and writing about what caused the Roman Empire to fall.
Well, that's a great question, because there's never an entirely new answer. But I think that what's new is that what a few and frankly sometimes kind of marginal and eccentric people had sometimes suspected may have been the case, based on sometimes very little evidence, that maybe nature had a role in the great transition from the ancient world to the medieval world, the collapse of one of history's truly great civilizations, the Romans. And what's new is that now we actually have pieces of evidence, physical evidence, in records of the ancient climate, and I think even more importantly, records of the genes, the genomes of the germs that caused absolutely devastating plagues. And so what's really exciting is that because of advances in the natural sciences, people like me, I'm trained in the humanities, are learning things that we simply didn't know. And so even though people had suspected that climate change and particularly pandemic diseases played a role in the demise of Roman power, we now have evidence to help us build a much clearer and richer picture of what really happened.
I want to say that you've brought together a lot of different strands of research, and most of that research has been within the last, say, decade or so. So this, I don't think people could even intelligently talk about these as being causes until recently. Does that sound safe to say?
That's very safe to say, and it's amazing when you think about the civilization that 1,500, 2,000 years ago, you would think that our knowledge of it changes slowly, and that's not the case at all. In fact, just over the last 5-10 years, what we know about this ancient civilization has changed radically, and it's an exciting time to be an ancient historian, and we're learning things that we didn't even know we would learn. That's maybe what's most exciting, is how surprising it is, and it will change in the next few years. I think we'll bring even more insights that we have only now the smallest inkling of what we might have.
Now, the rise and the sort of the beginnings of the Roman Empire occurred during what is now called the Roman Climate Optimum. That's 200 BC to AD 150. Talk to me about what the Roman Climate Optimum was and what that meant for the empire.
Well, we're used to living in a world where climate change is a major concern, and climate change that we're principally concerned about is anthropogenic. It's caused by, in effect, greenhouse gas emissions that are the byproduct of the modern fossil fuel economy. Well, every climate scientist understands that this human-induced change takes place within a natural system that isn't stable. And every climate scientist understands that the natural background is one of change. And we need to understand that natural variability and natural change to understand what humans are doing to the atmosphere. So what does that mean? It means that we now have a much deeper knowledge of the paleoclimate, of the background, the history of natural climate change. And even though the last 10,000 years have been relatively stable in the big picture, there was always major climate variability, climate change in this period of the past. And we now have a sense that in the very time period when the Romans are conquering the Mediterranean and building this empire, when their population is multiplying, their economy is growing at a rate that really no economy before had ever enjoyed, we now know that actually the climate during this period is extremely favorable if you're building an agricultural society right. in that part of the world, the Mediterranean. It's relatively humid, whereas today, of course, the biggest challenge for agriculture in the Mediterranean is dryness, is aridity. And this is a long period when it's actually wetter in the Mediterranean. That's a very good thing if you're trying to build an agricultural economy. And it's warmer because of, in fact, probably driven by high levels of solar energy coming to the Earth. The sun is a major source of natural climate variability and change. The sun isn't totally constant in the amount of radiation that it's emitting. And the Romans enjoy this period of relative warmth, humidity, stability. And so the climate is at least one part of the kind of Roman miracle, the extraordinary growth of people and economic output that we characterize with the kind of the grandeur of the Roman Empire.
There are several things that affect the you know, sort of year-to-year weather and the year-to-year climate overall in that area. And one of them is the same thing that affects us today is the North Atlantic Oscillation. But also the monsoonal in the Indian Ocean, and everything just sort of clicked for this period, and it was a perfect time to expand your empire. And it's amazing to read that because you realize how little we understand about the role of climate in history. I mean, I looked at this and started thinking about the whole history of humanity and realizing how important climate is.
It's always been an important part of the human past, and it's just a fact that historians are always influenced by the present, and I don't think that's a bad thing or a problem, especially if you're aware of it and appropriately cautious. But we don't have to read our own concerns into every chapter of the past. But at the same time, we live in a world where we're concerned about environmental crisis, environmental challenges, and it helps us look at the past in new ways, to ask different questions, to look for different patterns. And when you start to look at the patterns of climate change in the past, you realize that it's always been a part of the human story. The struggle to survive has been at times greatly helped by favorable climates and greatly challenged by unfavorable or highly erratic periods of the climate. And so it's absolutely integral to the whole human past. Our ancestors always lived with environmental challenges, and sometimes they're able to harness the power of the environment. Sometimes they're able to cope with challenges, and sometimes they simply were not. They were overwhelmed, and that's part of the Roman story, too, is that particularly in the later phases of the empire, the challenges of environmental change become so overwhelming that, along with many other factors, it proves insuperable for the Roman Empire.
The problem is when you're living in it, and this actually goes to for today too, people don't realize how temporary things are and that this is not the norm. So that, as you mentioned, change is the only constant. And the Romans living in this optimal time period thought that would just go on forever.
It's true. It's so hard to look at the world and realize how utterly normal and predictable change is. You don't know exactly how it'll change, but you know that the physical environment will change. You know that the biological environment will change. And the Romans had no concept of how radically the natural environment was about to change around them.
Now, there's three great plagues that occur throughout the course of your book for each of the three periods we'll talk about. And during this first period, there's the Antonine Plague. Is that how you pronounce it? The Antonine?
Right, Antonine Plague.
165 AD. Do we know what disease this was?
Well, we have a strong suspicion. The leading candidate is certainly the smallpox virus, variola major, possibly an ancestor of the smallpox that causes such enormous devastation from the 17th century onward. Now, it's an interesting question because I would want to hedge my bets. We don't know for sure because we haven't yet found the DNA of the pathogen that caused this plague in the second century. We may, and there certainly are archaeologists and geneticists who are looking for it in the skeletons of victims. Yep. Who are buried in mass graves that look like they're from the later second century. Nobody found it yet, and there aren't that many mass burials that survive from the later second century. So it's not shocking that we haven't found it yet. It's going to be hard to find, but I feel confident that that in the next 5 years, somehow someone will be able to find a victim, we can recover the genome of the pathogen. And it'll be interesting to see, is it smallpox or is it an ancestor of smallpox? That seems to be the most likely candidate based on what we know about what happened to victims of the disease. We have a very famous ancient doctor named Galen, oh, yeah, who was actually alive during this pestilence and described the symptoms. And they're certainly consistent with smallpox. They're not just absolutely conclusively smallpox, but it's also consistent with the epidemiology. What this disease does is extraordinary. I mean, it is just wiping out the population from Roman Egypt to Roman Britain in the space of a year or two. And there aren't that many germs that are capable of causing that much mortality over that that kind of space that quickly. It's something really, really nasty, and smallpox is the leading guess.
You describe it, and I really enjoyed this. Rome as a city was always full of disease. As a matter of fact, you describe the Romans as rich, but basically unhealthy. And that helped facilitate when these plagues happen, both the design and the way that the empire functioned, but also the cities themselves, especially Rome, really did their part to like help spread the disease.
I think it's the central paradox of Roman civilization is that the very advances that they're able to make, building these enormous cities, Rome itself reaches 1 million inhabitants. It's the first city to do so, and it's the first. It's the only Western city to have 1 million residents until London in 1800. And although the Romans had some things going in their favor, aqueducts, fresh water is extraordinarily important as a health resource. But just the sheer density and the challenges of sewage and waste disposal, of housing, of feeding that many people are so overwhelming that it's a paradox that the very progress of Roman civilization also causes these health and environmental challenges that the Romans aren't able fully to answer. And another piece of that is the Roman trading network. Right at the heart of everything the Romans are able to accomplish is the fact that they build this extraordinary commercial system. Roman law, property rights, trade, banks, and the Romans have extraordinary banks to finance commerce, and they trade everywhere and with everyone. They're trading with Africa, they're trading with India, they're trading with China. And the paradox of that is that those very same commercial networks that are so interconnected and so active become a conduit for the spread of germs that the Romans cannot even begin to imagine.
In each of these three periods that you talk about in the book, there is also religious consequences. Interesting things happen to which beliefs are growing, which ones are not. In the case of this first period, there was an outburst of Apolline religions, which is sort of odd.
It really is an important part of the story, how human beings experience and react to these massive traumas. And these events are traumatic. Imagine being in a world without anything like modern science. There's no germ theory. There's no easy rational explanation for why these mass-scale mortality events happen. And ancient societies think that plagues are caused by the anger of the gods. Right. And it's clear that the Romans are traumatized and shocked by this unprecedented mortality that reaches across the entire empire. They'd never experienced anything like that. And they think that the god Apollo, who is in ancient polytheistic religion the god of plague, they think that he's angry. And so there's this enormous outburst of effort to appease Apollo, to find out why he's angry and figure out how this society can restore itself to his graces and appease his anger.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Kyle Harper, professor of classics and letters and senior vice president and provost at the University of Oklahoma. And we're talking about his new book, The Fate of Rome, Climate Disease and the End of an Empire. Quickly going into the transitional period, 150 to 450 AD, there are political changes going on, but there's also the first sort of inklings of climate change. It still seems pretty favorable, but as you describe it, it's fluttering. Stuff starts to happen. Famines start to pop up in different areas, different food crises, and there's another plague. And it's a plague I'd not really paid a lot of attention to before. I don't even know if I'd heard of it before. The plague of Cyprian at 249 to 62. Do we know what this plague was?
This one is the most mysterious of the three great pandemics that strike the Roman Empire. This, the middle one in the middle of the third century, is the most mysterious, and it is enormously consequential. The Roman Empire really falls apart in a matter of a decade or two, and it's in fact remarkable that the Roman Empire is ever restored. This is the first fall of the Roman Empire, and it's clearly one of the major triggers is the outbreak of this pestilence that again sweeps across the entire empire, levels cities, empties the countryside and regions of the empire, and breaks down the imperial system itself. And I say it's the most mysterious because we don't yet have the DNA evidence of the germ, although we may get it if it's a DNA virus or a bacterium. People are looking. But we also don't have a medical writer like Galen to describe it. We, in fact, have quite a few sources, a surprising number of contemporary sources for a period of Roman history that's pretty dark. But none of them are medical writers. They're Christian bishops or Greek historians. And so the language they use is a little harder to associate with a particular kind of disease. Nonetheless, I think we have to try and speculate to rule out certain possibilities. It's not the bubonic plague. I think there are reasons why it's not smallpox. And then I think there are things that it might be. It could have been influenza, and here we are
right.
The centennial anniversary of the great Spanish influenza, and it's maybe a little bit easier for us to understand that zoonotic or like bird flu, avian influenzas can be unbelievably destructive. And there's some possibility, in fact, that the plague of Cyprian is an influenza. It actually has the same seasonal pattern. It peaks in the winter and abates in the summer, which is very different from most acute infectious diseases in the ancient world. So flu is a suspect. It'd be fascinating to be able to confirm that. But then there are maybe more exotic possibilities, viral hemorrhagic fevers like Ebola, that if you look at the symptoms that are described, granted, not by medical authorities, but by mostly by Christian observers, but who describe terrible hemorrhagic symptoms that are consistent with hemorrhagic fevers like Ebola. And so it's very speculative. We don't want to pretend to any kind of certainty, but I think it's important to hypothesize and to argue and reason to try and understand. It matters what particular diseases caused this kind of devastation, even in the distant past.
We're going to run out of time. I know this before we talk about it. I want to talk about this last section. You know, the empire's on the ropes. It didn't really rebound that well from this transitional period. And then two things just really sort of wallop the empire. One is an environmental and one is a plague. There is a plague, the Justinian plague, which starts out like 541 to 43 AD, but then outbreaks keep happening to 749. And this looks like it's the plague. This is the plague.
This is the plague. And it's, I think, the headline and the most interesting thing we've learned about Roman history in a generation, because in this case, we do have new DNA evidence recovered from archaeological victims that is tremendously important in helping us pinpoint the precise cause of this historic pandemic. And it is what I called the plague. What we mean by the plague is the bubonic plague. It's caused by a bacterium named Yersinia pestis. It is the same germ that causes the more famous medieval Black Death. People know about the 14th century Black Death, which is maybe the greatest biological catastrophe in all of human history. And the 6th century, the late Roman version of this, is equally devastating, and in some sense is also one of the most tragic and consequential biological disasters in history. This pandemic was so much greater even than the Antonine or Cyprian plagues. When you really try and imagine the devastation that could be caused by this tiny bacterium, it boggles the mind. It's unbelievably lethal and crafty.
But it's not all. That's not all that happened. There's the late antique Little Ice Age, which goes on from 450 to 700.
Yeah.
So you have the plague, and it's like, what? How much worse can it get? There's a Little Ice Age, and explain what that is.
It gets worse.
Then it gets a lot worse.
This too is an interesting area where we've learned so much just in the last few years. We know that in 536, and then again 4 years later, there are two massive volcanic eruptions. Volcanic eruptions induce cooling, and this sequence of large volcanic events in a row has just an effect that's out of all proportion of what we might even expect. It gets really, really cold. And so the decade of the 530s and 540s are the coldest period in the last 3,000 years. And it doesn't just sort of come and go. It actually stays cooler for a century and a half. And so historians of the climate are starting to call this the late antique Little Ice Age. And that is a very unfavorable environment if you're a Mediterranean farmer. And so you have simultaneously in the Roman Empire the most anomalous moment of climate change before modern warming, simultaneous with the outbreak of the worst biological catastrophe up to that point in human history. And so when you now look back at Roman history and you see the scale of these environmental events, I think it's impossible to not include them in the story of the fall of the Roman Empire.
It's absolutely amazing. And we were talking about religious consequences. Christianity was becoming the dominant religion in the area, in the empire. But the Christianity becomes very apocalyptic at this time period. And we also witnessed the rise of Islam. So there are tremendous religious consequences that come out of this time period, too.
It's true. Christianity is always an apocalyptic religion to some extent. I mean, the Book of Revelation is one of the Christian scriptures, and yet it's not always foregrounded. If you look at Christianity in the year 300 or 400, it's not a religion that expects the world to end imminently. But if you look in the later 6th century, after the Ice Age, and in particular after the bubonic plagues, that trauma, that catastrophe, sort of turns up the dial on apocalyptic expectations. And people think that these catastrophes are signs of the imminent last judgment, of the end of times. And all of a sudden, in the later 6th century, apocalyptic themes become pervasive in Christianity and in Judaism. Judaism is not a particularly apocalyptic religion, but in the later 6th and particularly the 7th centuries, Judaism becomes profoundly apocalyptic. And in the book, I make an argument that is a hypothesis, and I think it is consistent with a lot of what we've learned about the origins of Islam, that the Arabian Peninsula, the world that Muhammad grows up in, is really a integral part of the Roman world. The Arabs and the Romans, as well as the Persians, are interacting in all sorts of ways. And Islam emerges not sort of far beyond the Roman Empire, but really in a world that's deeply interconnected with what's going on inside Rome. And Islam, in its origins, is, I think, a strongly apocalyptic religion. Muhammad preaches that there is one God and he should be worshipped because the hour of his judgment is at hand. And if you look at what the Christians and the Jews are saying in the decades right around the emergence of Islam, a lot of those apocalyptic themes are exactly the same. And so I think that the environment helps create, it's not the only thing, but it helps create this apocalyptic atmosphere that nurtures the emergence of a more apocalyptic Christianity and a new apocalyptic religion out of Arabia.
We're completely out of time, and needless to say, this has some modern ramifications or lessons, and which you sum up really rather nicely in the final chapter. My guest tonight has been Kyle Harper, professor of classics and letters and senior vice president and provost at the University of Oklahoma. And we're talking about his new book. It's an important book and a fascinating book, too. It was a fascinating read. The Fate of Rome, Climate, Disease, and the End of an Empire. Kyle, it's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Mark.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.